From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with this look at local and statewide news. The results of a public opinion survey on tourism in Juneau are out. About 2,400 Juneau residents weighed in. To participate, people had to live in Juneau during the summer of 2019, the last big tourism season before the pandemic. On the overall effects of tourism, the majority of people who responded said they thought it had a positive impact on them. Just over a third said tourism had both positive and negative impacts. 20% said it didn't have any impact, and just 8% of people said tourism has a negative impact. These trends are similar to results from past surveys. The city has been conducting these since the 90s. Heather Hoagland from McKinley Research Group presented the survey findings to the Juneau Assembly on Monday. She said she thought it was significant that the results were so similar for the past 19 years, considering how much the tourism industry has changed during that time.
So between 2002 and 2021, we almost, or 2019, we almost doubled our cruise passenger volume. But really, these responses did not change very much, within 4 percentage points, and some in just 2 or 3 percentage point change. So even though it might seem boring, it's actually pretty remarkable that these responses are so consistent.
Residents who live in downtown or Thane were more likely to respond with negative impacts of tourism than those who live in other parts of the city. And people who live in those areas or on Douglas said that they felt more impacts overall from tourism than people who lived in Lemon Creek, the Mendenhall Valley, or out the road. More people also responded that they were negatively impacted by tourism online than through the phone survey. Hoagland said this could be because people who felt impacted by tourism were more likely to take the survey.
Online responses were felt more impacted by tourism. They also were twice as likely to be from downtown, much less likely to be from the valley.
People are split on the city's response to tourism. Almost half of the responses said the city isn't doing enough to manage the impacts of tourism on the community. And the other half say the city is doing enough or more than enough. When it comes to limiting cruise ships, almost two-thirds of the people who responded said they support limits on large cruise ships per day. When asked about what that limit should be, the top answer was 5. About 56% of people support Norwegian Cruise Line's plans for a new dock. People were then asked if their support would change if certain things were incorporated into that project, like a cruise ship limit, a park, or an ocean center. Hoagland said that these factors did change some people's levels of support.
The number one preference would be a cap of 5 large ships per day in Juneau's harbor.
The full report on the survey's results can be found at ktoo.org or on the city's website. Wasilla Republican Representative Christopher Kirka joined the growing list of candidates for governor. In an announcement posted on social media, Kirka criticized Governor Mike Dunleavy's health mandates early on in the pandemic.
To the governor, in a state already staggering under the alcohol and drug abuse, pot shops and liquor stores meant more than the Church of God. Walmart was essential, but your locally owned small business was not. The man who promised to stand tall for Alaska and chose to stand down.
Kirka says he was targeted in the recent redistricting, which put him in the same district as fellow conservative House member David Eastman.
The conservative grassroots of Alaska will not be so easily silenced. The political elite and this current governor are about to learn they lost their conservative base the second they allowed liberty to take a backseat to tyranny.
Kirka made the news in March, less than 2 months into his first term, when he protested a face mask requirement by removing his mask during a floor speech. Kirka left the floor session after House Speaker Louise Stutes said she preferred that he leave if he wouldn't wear a mask. Kirka is the former executive director of Alaska Right to Life. He introduced a bill in May to make abortion a crime. State courts have said abortion is protected under the right to privacy in the state constitution. He proposed an amendment to the state constitution that would change how judges are chosen. And he proposed another constitutional amendment saying that the state doesn't recognize federal ownership of any land in Alaska. The federal government owns most land in the state. Former U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller endorsed Kirka. Miller also criticized Dunleavy in a video posted on social media. Kirka is the 6th candidate to announce a run for governor. Along with Republicans Dunleavy and Kirka, the others are Democrat Les Guerra, Libertarians Roman Shevchuk and Billy Toyin, and Independent Bill Walker. The U.S. Department of the Interior says oil and gas companies should pay more to extract fossil fuels from federal waters and lands, like the 1 million acres that could be up for bid soon in Cook Inlet. It's one of several recommendations the department made in a report released over the holiday weekend, and it's drawing ire from both sides of the aisle. KDLL's Sabine Pooks reports.
Liz Merring is advocacy director of Homer environmental nonprofit Cook Inlet Keeper. She says it's about time the federal government updates its century-old leasing policies. But
the big hole in this is that it doesn't talk about climate change at all. And so it talks about finances. And if this was even 20 or 30 years ago, maybe it would have been appropriate to just pay us back. But it doesn't account for the real damage that climate change is doing.
In January, the Biden administration said it would review its process of selling tracts for oil and gas development when it hit pause on the lease sale in Cook Inlet, citing concerns about climate change. The new 18-page report, publicized months later, is the product of that review. The biggest takeaway? The Fed should raise their royalty rate. That's the percentage of revenue that oil and gas producers have to pay the government based on the amount of fuel they get out of the ground on any slice of federal land or on the ocean floor. The report says increasing what the companies are paying will create fair returns for taxpayers. Right now, the federal royalty rate is at a minimum 12.5% for offshore leases, and that hasn't changed in decades. The Interior's report doesn't suggest new royalty rates. It also recommends raising bond rates, which it says will better ensure companies properly clean up their abandoned wells. Another suggestion is that companies meet historical, environmental, and safety standards before they purchase leases. While advocates from environmental groups say the report doesn't do enough, industry advocates say it's too strict. Kara Moriarty, head of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, says the industry is already struggling to rebound from the pandemic, and increasing royalty rates, she says, would be a serious blow. She says the recommendations all but ban offshore drilling.
It's just disheartening that they took 10 months to say what I think we expected them to say in the first place.
Meanwhile, the federal government is moving toward holding a lease sale in Cook Inlet. The Department of the Interior tried to pause that sale and a sale in the Gulf of Mexico while its review was underway. But a district court judge ordered both to continue. It's unclear how the new report will impact the Cook Inlet sale. The feds haven't yet laid out a concrete plan to enact the report's recommendations. And some of those recommendations overlap with provisions in the large Build Back Better bill that's making its way through Congress. Merring says it's possible royalty rates will be higher for companies bidding on leases in the Cook Inlet auction, spreading more of the wealth from extraction to taxpayers. But really, she hopes the Biden administration can stop the sale in Cook Inlet from happening altogether.
It's very clear that they do have the ability to cancel the lease sale proposed in Cook Inlet. And so we will still be asking them to do that.
Moriarty says the oil and gas industry trade group will be making a case of its own.
For us, it just means we need to double down and to continue to try to communicate the best we can why consistent lease sales are important in both the Cook Inlet and the Beaufort Sea, and why it makes sense to continue to develop our oil and gas resources.
Even without any legal challenges, a sale in Cook Inlet is not guaranteed. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management canceled lease sales in 2006, 2008, and 2010 in the inlet due to lack of industry interest. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
State health officials are asking Alaskans to redouble their COVID precautions over the coming weeks as they brace for the arrival of the new Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The variant was first identified in South Africa last week, and scientists raised alarm over a high number of mutations it has compared to other variants. Since then, it has been detected in several other countries and has led to worldwide travel restrictions. Still, it's not clear whether the variant is more infectious than other variants and whether it causes different or more severe symptoms. Alaska's chief medical officer, Dr. Ann Zink, says state labs are ready to detect the new variant when it arrives.
Just to be clear, we have no known cases in the state of Alaska or in the U.S. at this moment. That doesn't mean we don't have them. It's just we don't have any known sequences.
State labs sequence about 300 positive cases of COVID each week to test for different variants. Currently, nearly all are Delta variant cases. When Omicron cases are detected, they'll be reported to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and on a state-run database. Zink says that Alaskans' reliance on air travel could put the state at risk for an early arrival of Omicron. She says the state airports will start handing out rapid test kits to travelers, and she's urging Alaskans to take other precautions.
is just a good reminder that we're highly connected to the rest of the world, and to use our tools, including testing, masking, staying home if you're sick, to slow it down, because how much international travel we have really does just put us a part of that international community and puts us at risk for having this introduced quickly.
Early genetic evidence suggests Omicron's mutations may help it evade the immune system and reinfect people who previously had the disease. This is KTOO News.